It is Mackling and McGarry. Hal Anderson checks in with us in our next segment to tee up what is coming up on Connecting Winnipeg. But right now, we are so excited. We always jump at the opportunity to visit with this author. He's a member of the Order of Canada and the Order of Ontario. His novel, Flash Forward, was made into the ABC TV series of the same name, starring Joseph Fiennes and John Cho. He's one of only 8 authors ever and the only Canadian to win all 3 of the world's top awards for Best Science Fiction Novel of the Year, the Hugo, the Nebula, and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. And according to the U.S. science fiction trade journal, Locus, our guest is the number one all-time worldwide leader in number of award wins as a science fiction or fantasy novelist. Stephen King is number 2.
So imagine, if you will, it is 2059. 2 very different groups have their minds uploaded into a quantum computer in Waterloo, Ontario. Actually, what? You know what? How about we let Academy Award-winning best actor Brendan Fraser tell us more?
For science's brightest minds, it was a one-way mission to a strange new world. For convicts like me, a virtual twist on Cold Hard Time. Ink the deal and you're in cryonic suspension. Mind uploaded to a quantum computer, all waiting to be downloaded to a brighter future. But destiny is about to get rebooted. Downloaded only from Audible. This is not what we signed up for.
So this is the premise of the latest book from our next guest. We welcome back to the start the Dean of Canadian Science Fiction, futurist, and author, Robert J. Sawyer. Robert, always a pleasure.
Oh, Greg, what a pleasure to be back here. And Brendan is right. It is available from Audible, but it is also the book that downloaded by me is now out in print and ebook as well. That's what we're celebrating this week.
Yeah, you had the book launch at McNally Robinson last night. So congratulations on your 25th novel. That's quite the achievement. When you started out, could you have ever imagined?
I couldn't imagine. You know, it was 1990, my first book came out, and I was just so thrilled to have a book in a bookstore, and I thought, that's the pinnacle. That I was able to make a career out of this has been absolutely astonishing to me. The support I've had from the Canadian media, including your fine self, who've been interviewing me for many years, has been absolutely wonderful. I couldn't have done it without Canada saying, hey, we want to celebrate a local science fiction writer.
Well, we heard Brendan Fraser. Did the birth certificates help there at all in terms of getting him to be a part of the Audible?
The producer and I were asked by Audible, who do we want to voice this? And we said, and this was before Brendan had won the Academy Award for The Whale, Best Actor. We said, we want Canadians, because we're Canadians. The producer and I were Canadian. How about Brendan Fraser? And they said, okay. And then when he won the Academy Award, we drew up our B list and handed it in to Audible. Well, you can't get Brendan now. They said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, he's too expensive now. And he said, yeah, he probably is, but we will pay it. So we got Brendan after he won the Academy Award, and he was terrific. He was an absolutely perfect. He's who I wanted to narrate this, and he does a spectacular job of narrating it.
So the very notion of having our thoughts, our dreams, our nightmares uploaded and saved for us to reference, I think is something that many of us have probably contemplated. So in your 2059, what's going on?
So in 2059, there's these two groups. There's astronauts and their prisoners who are both having their bodies frozen and their consciousness uploaded. The astronauts, so they can have the body's supposed to be loaded on a starship and head off to the nearest star to our sun, Proxima Centauri. And the prisoners are going to serve a speeded up sentence in virtual reality. 20 years will pass for them, but only 10 months in the outside world. So their kids won't have grown up. Their whatever job they did might be waiting for them when they've served their time. But after everybody is frozen, immediately after, civilization collapses. And these guys end up not thawing out for 500 years. And they're the only survivors. These prisoners with the wrong stuff, these astronauts supposedly with the right stuff, and the two very different communities have to try and rebuild civilization.
I'm intrigued. Sign me up. That sounds fantastic. So we'll leave that there in terms of the book, but in an overall sense, like we've often marveled at your futurist designation. And yesterday we spoke with economist and author Jeffrey Rubin.
Oh, and yes, certainly.
Of course, he was fantastic, and he was discussing with us the new normal for everything from manufacturing to interest rates. And so we also discussed black swan events. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, as you look back to some of the predictions or some of the visions and the things that you wrote about in the past, is like, have black swan events impacted the path of some of the things that you imagine might happen?
So it's interesting that black swan is a rare, almost unpredictable event. And the problem with being a science fiction writer is we're like the Greek prophetess, the female prophet Cassandra, who constantly was saying these things are inevitably going to happen and nobody pays attention. So artificial intelligence is going to change everything and nobody paid any attention. Climate change, nobody paid any attention, right? So the things that we've been warning about aren't bizarrely, strange things. They're predictable extrapolations from what we already knew. We take history, move it forward to the present, continue it forward. So the things that I've been predicting, my colleagues have been predicting, strike us in retrospect as inevitabilities, and yet nobody paid attention. Now, Ray Bradbury said, my job is not to predict the future, it's to prevent the future. And he was warning about book banning, right? Well, here we are in 2024 doing exactly what he warned about in Fahrenheit 451, or as we call it here in Canada, Celsius 233.
Well, and the thing that I love about science fiction, on top of just the fantastic stuff that you see and that couldn't possibly be real in our time, is that there. Am I wrong in saying this? What the core of science fiction is that it's cautionary tales.
Absolutely, it is. If this goes on, then these are going to be the consequences of it. And we've been doing that from the dawn of time. From the dawn of science fiction. The first science fiction novel was really a novel of biological engineering, because it was Frankenstein. It was the first ever science fiction novel. A scientist conducting an experiment, see if he can reanimate dead matter using electricity based on experiments that were being done with electricity at that time. And it is always saying, well, you know, it's going to go wrong, or it could go wrong. If this goes on, what are the possible downsides? And we serve an important purpose, because it isn't the businesses that are going to say, oh, yeah, here's our new technology. Here are all the jobs that are going to be lost. Here are all the people who are going to be despondent for the rest of their lives because of what they're doing. They're hyping it. And we're saying, wait a minute, stop and think.
I think it was 5, maybe even 6 years ago that we had a discussion with you exclusively about AI.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The potential perils of AI. And so as things evolve and here we sit in 2024, are you as concerned as ever about the downside of AI?
Yeah, in fact, one of the themes of the Downloaded is, what are we going to do when we have truly intelligent machines? I'm very concerned about it for my own profession. You know, these large language models that are being used to generate the things that AI are producing, there was a exposure of what texts have been scraped, and 24 of my 25 novels, all of them but the current one, the Downloaded, have been fed into ChatGPT, and along with everybody else's, anybody who's ever published anything online, your work has been taken without compensation, is being regurgitated and fed out for profit and being used by companies that are making, they're hoping, billions or trillions eventually of dollars off of AI while displacing enormous numbers of workers. AI was supposed to, robotics and AI was supposed to take care of all of the drudge jobs. And instead, it's taking jobs from actors, from musicians, and from writers like myself, and broadcasters like you. You know, I know, because I can see you in the flesh and blood there, Greg, that you are a human being. But the audience has no way of knowing whether you or I are AI chatbots. Maybe today they could tell the difference. 5 years from now, they won't be able to tell the difference.
Well, that's got to drive you nuts to know that your work's been fed into this thing and you don't get a penny from that. Like, how do they get away with that?
Well, this is it. We have all kinds of regulations for broadcasting. The CRTC regulates what you can do. There is no federal oversight for artificial intelligence in any jurisdiction in the world. The EU has put forward a draft set of legislation, but they haven't been passed yet. There's any bureaucratic process, going to take years. So right now it's the Wild West. If you want to do something with AI, you can do it with no regulations constraining whatsoever what you can do.
So when you look at things like cryptocurrency, you look at some of the internet scams that have been plaguing us for going on two decades already, and this ability to sort of be anonymous and be one or two or three steps ahead of the law, that Brett mentioned cautionary tale. Why do we insist on not paying attention to these things that, you know, the things that we've seen before, and not try and get out ahead of it, like reactionary versus being proactive?
It drives me nuts. You're absolutely right, because science fiction warned about artificial intelligence. Science fiction warned about a plague. It was inevitable that we were going to have something like the COVID pandemic. And yet people just seem to blindly say, it's science fiction. It's the future. I don't have to worry about it. People are so focused, and I can understand economic reality, focusing you on how am I going to feed my family this week. But the whole purpose of science fiction is that longer perspective. And I just wish more people, including more political leaders, were readers.
That's the word, though, right? Leaders.
Yes.
Leaders need to lead.
That's right. Exactly. Now, Barack Obama did read science fiction. Justin Trudeau occasionally reads science fiction. I don't know if Pierre Poilievre does, but it behooves them all to read this stuff and say, okay, what is coming down the pike? And I'm very excited that sometimes the government pays attention. I had dinner last night with Reverend Professor Emeritus James A. Christie from the University of Winnipeg. He and I met about 20 years ago when the federal government asked him as a theologian and me as a science fiction writer to come to Ottawa and advise the Department of Justice about what shape privacy laws related to genetic information should have in Canada. That was forward thinking, but it was almost all, that was your black swan. So rare for the government to say, okay, I'm not worried about the next election. Tell me what it's going to do 20, 30 years down the road. We need way more thinking like that from our elected officials.
Robert J. Sawyer, Canada's top science fiction writer. His new book is called The Downloaded. Robert, thank you for stopping by. It's always
my pleasure.
Treat. 9:48 with Mackling and McGarry. We're going to check in with Hal Anderson after we take a peek at your forecast on CJOB.